This is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the September's issue of the Ladies' Home Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is called Internet Intervention by Mike Brzezinski. "We need an intervention," I tweeted. That I sent this SOS via Twitter should tell you something about my wired family. As a journalist and the co-host of MSNBC's Morning Joe, I always have my BlackBerry with me. I use it on air. I jog with it and check emails as I run. I even sleep with it. There is always the potential of a news breaking overnight. If I'm not on my BlackBerry, I'm working on my laptop, keeping up with the news, updating my website, or sending messages on Twitter. My husband, Jim Hoffer, an investigated reporter, is a crackberry and internet addict himself. When it comes to technology, our two daughters, Emily, 14, and Carly, 12, put us to shame. They live in an online haze of YouTube clips, multi-personal video chats, and the latest computer games. They can wield four remote controls simultaneously, figure out the function of every button on a digital camera without reading the instructions, and walk, chew gum, and text all at the same time. I sent the SOS that day because I was worried that my girls' total obsession with technology had gotten out of control, a fear triggered by two upsetting and embarrassing incidents. The first happened early this spring when I discovered that my younger daughter had a Facebook page. I had learned this by checking her computer history, something I am not a terribly nosy parent, hadn't been doing very often. Facebook requires users to be at least 13, so she had obviously lied about her age to sign up, then proceeded to post messages and pictures of herself and our family dog. On her page, there was access to a short message board that when I scrolled through, it made the blood drain from my face. The conversations taking place all between kids in her school were those like you'd see on a porn site, with the foulest, most graphic talk about sex you can imagine. My daughter was not participating in these lewd conversations, but she was certainly scrolling through them as she communicated with her friends. I had no idea how long Carly had been exposed to this filth or how much she even understood. Jim and I confronted her, and she seemed confused and embarrassed. She also didn't understand why it was so wrong that she lied in order to open up a Facebook page. Her explanation was that all the other kids in school were doing it. We had her close her account, and I called some of the parents whose children were also participating, who were as shocked as much as I was. As a parent, I felt helpless and stupid, but most of all scared. How could I have not known that my 12-year-old was on Facebook? What if she had given out personal information? What if someone had used it to contact her? I was reeling at the possibilities. The second incident took place a few weeks later and involved a twit pic. That's a photo you take on your phone, download, and send out to your followers on Twitter. My co-host, Joe Scarborough, and I often send tweets and twit pics to followers our daily show, usually behind-the-scenes observations and photos of places we visit on location. It's a great news-sharing medium, and it's fun PR, too. Though I could tweet like a pro, for some reason, I hadn't been able to get the twit pic part down. I could take the picture with my phone and email it to myself, but I couldn't ever get it to go anywhere else. So I'd gotten to the habit of having Carly do it for me. To save time, I told her my Twitter logon and password. Bad, 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 bad idea. Recently, my girls hosted a sleepover, and they stayed up late giggling into the night. That's what little girls do at sleepovers. Now, add a computer to the equation. And the fact that Mommy was very groggy from a week of getting up at 3:30 a.m. every morning and a full day on Saturday hosting a women's conference in New York City. Can anyone help my daughter, Miss Justin Bieber? Asked the tweet sent out in my name. This message went not just to the 19,000-plus Twitter followers of Morning Joe, but also to most of my colleagues at NBC News. White House correspondent Savannah Guthrie even retweeted the message. I woke up the next morning to literally scores of emails on my BlackBerry from concerned friends. Subject line, daughter of tweeter. Message, Micah, do you know your daughter is tweeting in your name? I was mortified. Imagine what Carly and her friends could have said, but also furious of myself that I had left the kids alone with the internet all night long. I should have known better. 12-year-olds may be technologically advanced, but they are still children who have not yet developed the moral guardrails they need to stay safe in cyberspace. I had finally learned my lesson. As a parent, the only thing I can do to protect my children is to never leave them alone when they're using the internet. But I also realized that this is easier said than done. So I decided to call an expert for help. Perry Aftab, Executive Director of Wired Safety, was kind enough to come to my house and sit down with us. She helped us design a contract for our household that outlined rules we immediately put into effect. Here are those rules. Number one, no computers in bedrooms or the basement. The only place a computer can be used is in the living room or the dining room. Because she is older, Emily gets a reprieve so she can do homework at her desk in her room. But the computer screen must be visible from the door, which will remain open, and my husband and I can and will walk by unannounced at any time. Rule number two, no going onto the net without asking a parent's permission. Three, no iChatting during the week unless Emily and Carly maintain a B average or higher. If the grades are good, they can chat for a maximum of 30 minutes a day during the week. Four, Jim and I can check history at any moment, which we do regularly. Aftab also suggested that I use the parental controls on my daughter's computers to block inappropriate sites and talked about the various kinds of software that help kids protect kids online. My children understand that if they break the rules, I'll install Spectre Pro, with which I can see everything they read or type in their computers. But so far, they've stuck to the contract, and I have felt a little more relaxed. Since the intervention, my girls know they need to exercise better judgment when it comes to the big, scary world of the internet. And so do my husband and I. There are some online safety supplies. We asked Pari Aftab, Executive Director of Wired Safety, to recommend tools that help you restrict your child's internet access or to help you monitor their activity. The first thing you should do, she says, is set the parental controls on your computer. If it runs Windows Vista, you can use these functions located under User Account to limit computer use to specified times of day and to choose which computer programs or websites your child can access. Parental controls on Macs are located under the System Preferences, can be set to automatically filter out adult websites or to allow access only to websites you specify. But other softwares you can buy can bring you even more peace of mind. For blocking websites, McAfee Family Protection is a $40 package, in addition to allowing you to block different categories or types of objectionable websites, such as adult gambling. This software can filter content inappropriate from children under 18 on sites like YouTube. For monitoring computer activity, you can purchase Spectre Pro for $100. This software automatically records websites, email, iChats, and search terms, even every keystroke your child types. Its most popular feature is screen snapshot surveillance, which shows you exactly what your kid does online, step by step, with video playback. For safer browsing, you can use Kidzu. That's KIDZUI. It's free. Instead of using Internet Explorer or Firefox, parents can go to KidZoo, KIDZUI.com, to download this browser and search engine designed especially for kids. It offers access to more than 2 million games, websites, and videos that have been reviewed and approved by parents and teachers. Here's another article about technology, but it's called Don't Worry, You Can Fix It by Michelle Lodge. As you undoubtedly know, when it comes to cell phones, computers, and other electronic devices, just about anything can go wrong. Screens freeze, devices refuse to turn on or off, important information evaporates into thin air. It's not cheap to get this stuff repaired, but you can solve some of the most irritating problems yourself using items you have at home. You'll be surprised how easy it is to fix things on your own, says Veronica Belmont, co-host of the internet TV show Techzilla. Always start by going to the manufacturer's website and clicking on its troubleshooting guide. No luck? Then try one of these low-tech fixes, courtesy of Techzilla, the Geek Squad, and Gina Trappin, author of Upgrade Your Life. Your cell phone took a spill. Happens all the time. The phone in your pocket slips into the bathroom sink or gets a drink spilled on it. The fix? Act fast. Fish the phone out of the liquid and remove the battery and SIM card, subscriber identity module, the chip that stores personal information. If you have an iPhone, turn it off right away. Shake the phone gently to get rid of the liquid, then blot off excess. Next, take the phone apart by removing the case, slot covers, and panels to expose the circuitry. Use a vacuum cleaner to suck out the moisture. Do not let the wand touch the phone. Or place the phone in an airtight container of uncooked rice to draw out overnight. Do not use a blow dryer. The air pressure may force the water deeper inside the phone. If your phone took an ocean dip, you're in bigger trouble because salt corrodes electronics. If possible, take the phone apart right away and rinse it with fresh water before beginning the drying out process just described. Tech tip, if the phone doesn't turn on after you reassembled it, plug it into the power charger. Still dead as a doornail, replace the battery and keep your fingers crossed. What if a disc stops or skips? How many times has a DVD or a CD gotten stuck in the middle of a movie or your favorite song? Dirt or a light scratch on the surface is likely the culprit. The fix? Examine the disc surface to find the flaw. Then rub the surface in a circular motion using a microfiber cloth soaked in furniture spray like Pledge, hard liquor like vodka, or toothpaste containing baking soda. If doing the above doesn't work, hold the scratched area up to a 60-watt incandescent light bulb for 20 seconds to soften the surface and then play it again while the disc is hot. Your credit or debit card can't be scanned? The person behind you in line may assume you've maxed out, but the real reason your card isn't working is that the magnetic strip is scratchy or dirty. So wipe the surface clean using a pant leg is fine. Try it again. Still no go? Rub the card with a layer of a plastic bag. Then run it through the scanner again. This trick sometimes works, but nobody knows why. So a tip is store your credit cards in your wallet, the magnetic strip down. Is your computer getting buggy? Are you getting a lot of error messages? Does your computer freeze or shut down unexpectedly? Have files mysteriously disappeared? These glitches could mean that your hard drive, which stores your data, is finally about to fail. This happens to everyone eventually. The fix. If you regularly back up your computer files or subscribe to an online service that does this for you, you can rest easy. If not, It is critical that you take immediate steps to save your information, your letters, your pictures, etc., before it's gone for good. Try what tech professionals do as a last-ditch effort to retrieve data. Put your hard drive in the freezer for 24 hours in a sealed Ziploc bag. Because the cold causes contraction, a jammed part may start working again temporarily while you reinsert it in your computer. To locate the hard drive, open your computer or laptop panel and look at the part that is made of silver and black metal and is the width and length of a recipe card and about the depth of a double CD case. There's usually a white label affixed to this component. The hard drive is attached to a cable that's hooked up to the motherboard, often green with lots of tiny components. You probably don't need a tool to disengage the drive. Simply remove it and detach its plugs from the cable by pulling. Once the drive has been in the freezer for a day, take it out and immediately reinsert the drive into your computer, then try to find your data and transfer your files to an external hard drive. You may have to repeat this exercise more than once. What if your keyboard gets doused? Keyboards tend to attract the very thing they don't need, spills. The fix for a minor spill, dip a cotton swab or microfiber cloth in 90% isopropyl alcohol and dab it over the affected areas to remove any stickiness. If you're dealing with a laptop keyboard, use the alcohol sparingly and only if the keys are sticking. With bigger spills, unplug your keyboard, turn it upside down, and shake out the liquid. Turn a doused laptop on its side with the CD slot facing down and let the liquid trickle out. Tech tip, in the event of a major spill, pour a small amount of the straight isopropyl alcohol into the affected area of the keyboard, then let it drain and dry before you try to use it again. What if your Wi-Fi has cold spots? You set up an external wireless router at home, but the signal isn't strong enough to reach every room. The fix? First, move the router to a more centralized location or to a place with fewer walls. Still no signal? Go to freeantennas.com, freeantennas. For instructions on building a 6-inch high passive reflector or an antenna boost using household items like foil, glue, and acetate sheet. Search for the Easy 12 template on the website, print it out, glue it to the aluminum to the acetate, make slots as indicated in the instructions, and attach it behind your Wi-Fi router. It may look goofy, but it works. Tech tip, if you don't mind shelling out cash, pick up a router booster for about $100. But the best thing, prevent problems before they start. Number one, keep your computer components clean. A good rule of thumb is to wipe the outside of your laptop or computer monitor once a week with a water-dampened microfiber cloth and to follow up once a month using a cloth moistened with rubbing alcohol. Do not spray liquid directly on your screen, or it could trickle down into the monitor or laptop and cause damage. Never use window cleaners, since it can remove your screen's anti-glare finish. Spray the keyboard with an aerosol air duster sold in office supply stores to eliminate dust. 2. Be careful when it's cold. If you've left your computer, MP3 player, or some other device in a car trunk on a frigid day, allow it to warm in a comfortable room, probably for 30 to 40 minutes before turning it on. Cranking up a chilled machine in a warm room can cause condensation to short out the device. 3. Avoid heat. If you've been carrying your phone around in your pocket, the heat of your body can speed up the chemical processes in the battery that make it run down faster. To avoid this, keep the phone in your handbag. America's most amazing schools. A new wave of creativity is brightening the educational landscape. We think these 10 programs are real standouts. By Lisa Guernsey and Sonia Harmon. We've all heard the bad news. Our public schools are in a sorry state. In a survey of 300 developed nations, Americans' high school students ranked 24th in math and 17th in science. Meanwhile, our dropout rates are at a near crisis level, with more than a quarter of the students failing to graduate. And the recession has inflicted more damage, forcing layoffs among teachers, larger class sizes, and cutbacks in important programs. Happily, however, thousands of bold and resourceful educators are brimming with innovative strategies to lift the performance of American schools and give students new opportunities to learn. With a panel of experts, we chose 10 public schools across the country, some regular and district schools, some charter schools. Those are schools subsidized by public funds but not operated by the local school district, and some magnet schools that exemplify what American education is doing right. The first amazing school is the Dr. William W. Henderson Inclusion Elementary School. It is grades K through 5 in Boston, Massachusetts. Meeting the needs of special education students is a constant challenge for educators. Henderson's Inclusion has been pursuing a surprisingly simple and highly successful strategy for more than two decades. It places students who have physical, mental, and emotional disabilities in classrooms alongside their normally developing peers. The school is a pioneer of education philosophy known as inclusion, the belief that all children, disabled and non-disabled alike, benefit from being taught together. In the hallways at Henderson, where a third of the school's 230 students has some sort of disability, wheelchairs and pedestrians vie for space. Two teacher teams, one who has special ed training, provides individual instructions. To parents, this is an approach which is a win-win. Both teachers are hands-on with all the kids, says Kathleen Mahoney, whose 9-year-old and 6-year-old twins attend Henderson. 6-year-old, so 25 kids get two teachers full-time, and my children don't see any differences between themselves and a child with disability. Further proof of success, the school's long waiting list and its recent designation as a high performer in language arts. School number 2, Irvington High School, grades 9 through 12 in Fremont, California. Recycling and conservation are now standard at many schools, but Irvington High has upped the ante. Every classroom at this 2,100-student school has compact fluorescent light bulbs operated by motion sensor and all-night computers and vending machines that shut down at night. Solar panels on the front lawn collect energy, which is tracked on a school website. Last year, a junior won a hybrid bus for the school's district after he wrote a prize-winning essay about Irvington's energy-saving campaign. Next up, cutting down on the school's paper use. Environmentalists and the district's budget office are delighted by this activism, which has resulted in a 33% drop in electricity and has saved the school $16,000. But the green momentum is just one aspect of the school's year-long change project, which requires students to find new ways to serve the community. We want our kids to be creative, says Principal Pete Murchison. Figuring out how to do something new is the essence of learning. Irvington High is clearly on the right track. Its many honors include being named a National Blue Ribbon School, an award given academic excellence by the Department of Education. The next school is KIPP Dream Prep, grades pre-K through 3 in Houston, Texas. The disparity in standardized test scores between disadvantaged minority children and their white middle-class counterparts is a source of endless frustration for educators who have made closing the achievement gap an urgent priority. To the rescue, the Knowledge is Power program, or KIPP, a nationwide network of charter schools that offer a rigorous college preparatory curriculum to students who would otherwise be relegated to substantially substandard neighborhood schools. At KIPP Dream Prep, where 98% of the students qualify for lunch subsidies, the challenge begins at age 3. Even the kindergarten classrooms are labeled with pictures of college mascots to get the kids used to the idea that college is in their future. For the school's 700 students, the day is jam-packed. It begins at 7 a.m. and ends at 5 p.m. Staff regularly visits families at homes to persuade parents to sign contracts promising to help with homework, read to their kids nightly, and volunteer at school. We need everyone involved in the life of a child, says Principal Olive Moore, who points proudly to the fact that 90% of KIPP students go on to graduate from college, a sharp contrast to the high school dropout rates that prevail at the local schools. The next school is the Brooklyn Generation, grades 9 through 12 in Brooklyn, New York. When good teachers have more time with smaller classes, students achieve, proclaims the website for the Generation Schools Network, whose pilot project is the Brooklyn Generation School. That view is crucial to the group's central mission, to turn around failing urban schools. At Brooklyn Generation, a high school is housed in one such school. The school day has been structured to enable teachers to do better jobs. Enrollment in core classes is capped at 16, allowing for one-on-one instruction. And the academic year is 200 days instead of the standard 180, without increasing teachers' hours. Instead of the customary summer off, teachers get 2 months breaks while students participate in career seminars that include visits to potential employers. Teachers love the outside-the-box approach to their profession. Teaching can be really isolating and frustrating, says math teacher Diane Crewshaw. But here, everyone wants to collaborate. As for student achievement, in the 2007-2008 school year, Brooklyn Generation ranked in the top 5 of 40 comparable schools in attendance, credit accumulation, and pass rates on the New York State exam, and first in standardized test scores. The next school is called Mast Academy, grades 9 through 12 in Miami, Florida. The teenagers who attend Mast, Maritime and Science Technology Academy, weren't afraid to get their feet wet. A hallmark of this marine-themed high school, located just yards from Biscayne Bay, is hands-on experience with the environment. Students regularly explore the water, take samples, and analyze whatever washes up. Course offerings include classes on solar energy, engineering, scuba diving, and MAST is home to the nation's only Coast Guard Junior ROTC program. But students don't need to be an aspiring oceanographer or marine biologist to attend MAST. Our students are driven and they have a wide range of ambition, says Principal Thomas Fisher II. High quality education is what we're really about, and Fisher has the statistics to back up his claim. Fully 100% of MAST graduates enroll in a 4-year college, and students' SAT scores average more than 200 points above the national norm. Unsurprisingly, this record of academic excellence has made the magnet school a top choice for students throughout Miami. This year, 1,900 applications were placed for only 126 spots. Qualified candidates were then chosen by lottery. The other schools were in Denver, Colorado, Washington, D.C., Henderson, Minnesota, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You may read more about them on the magazine's website. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of From Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.